Hello to all our four-legged furry friends and their humans, and welcome to What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast. Each episode will see us dive into the world of dogs, breeding, and breeders. We'll discuss the latest news in the breeding world, as well as topics ranging from the show world to genetics to puppy scams and much, much more. And we'll have visits from guests, including our favorite breeders, vets, organizations, and other personalities within the dog world. So whether you're young, old, a newbie, a veteran, a crossbreed, a purebreed, you're welcome here at What the Bark. So I'm Nathan Oliveri. I'm the co-founder at Right Paw. We're a web platform that promotes and celebrates responsible dog breeders to the public. And here with me, I've got George Sofranidis. George, do you want to introduce yourself as well?
Yeah, hi, Nathan. It's George Sofranidis. I'm co-founder and managing director at Orivet Genetic Pet Care. And we offer a range of genetic tests to animal enthusiasts, from breeders to pet owners and veterinarians.
So George and I are going to be your co-hosts on this journey. This is our first episode ever. And George, I know you've been wanting to do a podcast for a long time.
Yeah, it's great, Nathan. It's so good to have someone who's... So I like to think you're the yang and I'm the yin of it. You're the younger side of it. And I've always been something it's I think it's important that we provide some education and some information for all these four-legged friends and someone to drive it who's been you. So it's been great that you've been able to reach out and sort of get that train going past the station, as we like to say. And I'm jumping on your train, so it's all exciting. I'm excited by it.
I think it's going to be great. And I think, we'll touch on this a little bit more, but, you know, you've got quite the reputation in the dog breeding world. I think you've built a bit of your own brand.
It's built a lot of grey hair is what I would say. So I'd like to say, I think I'm 25 years old with 30 years of experience. It's without giving away too much of my age. So yes, it is. I have been in this industry for a very long time. Some people think I'm crazy. Some people can't believe I still haven't opened up that coffee shop. But no, I've been in it because, of course, I'm passionate about it. It's something that, you know, I've seen grow over the last 25 years, made some fantastic friends along the way, and just continue to offer innovative tools for breeders, which is exactly what Right Paw is doing as well. Hence why I think the synergy is fantastic between what we're both trying to achieve here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in this first episode, we're going to basically start our podcast journey by getting to know each other a little better and hearing about the stories of Orivet and Right Paw. And as you said, two organizations trying to make a difference in the breeding world as well. Before we get stuck into it, I'd love to hear a bit more about your journey with Orivet, you know, where you started, you know, how did the idea for Orivet come about? Where did you start beforehand? I'd love to hear a bit about that.
So it's only a 50-minute podcast, but I'll try and get all my sort of 50-odd years.
Give us a synopsis.
So I've always liked using genetics to solve things, and that was crime. Forensic science is where I first started. So using genetics to help solve human aspects of crime. And then from there, I just found that the human side of it to be quite not as, you know, as rewarding as the animal side. So then I moved into more of an animal genetics conservation role with universities, and I worked for the Zoological Parks and Gardens Board and was on grants and trying to fund and have employment consistently with grant work a challenge. So I thought, I've got to somehow find out how to make money out of this. There's got to be a way you commercialize genetics and make money. So I started off doing what we call bird sexing, where we use genetics to determine...
Bird sexing?
Yes, exactly, to determine the sex of your bird before you set them up as breeding pairs.
Got it.
And Nathan, sometimes people just want to know whether to call their bird George or Georgina. So by understanding the sex, you're able to set up breeding pairs, and then we're offered some disease testing. But I needed to expand that more. And I sort of looked at dogs, as you would. I had a dog and thought there must be, and there was one disease called VWD. So my journey started with von Willebrand's disease, and that was close to 20 years ago, where I worked for a public company called Genetic Technologies. And then things moved on and I decided, well, maybe it's about time I sort of try to do this on my own and working with other members. And I have a business partner who is part of Orica Genetic Pet Care, Dr. Noam Pick, and good news, he's a veterinarian. So he helped me build this journey, and here I am now, still black hair's changed to grey hair and still continuing to offer more and more tests. So that's where the journey has started. The coffee shop is still on the radar, but maybe in this current environment, I park it for a bit longer.
Was that always the plan? The coffee shop was the first business, and then it morphed into Orovet.
That's right. So in some ways it's easier to deal with your French bulldog, Labrador breeder who just simply wants it, rather than, you know, can I have a soy skinny latte or a mocha? You know, all those, they're just as challenging trying to work out how to make these coffees. And it's no longer just one simple style of coffee. It's 10 different types.
Well, I would argue genetic testing is probably a little bit more difficult than the coffee orders that you might find. But
yeah, Nathan, I want to find out about your journey. Being the younger person, what got you into this right paw and this companion animal sort of industry?
Well, absolutely. I think it's been an interesting journey for me as well, because I've always been sort of involved in the dog world with my partner. They say, you know, you need to, like, if you're looking to work on something you're passionate about, you know, you look close to home, and you can't get much closer to home than your own partner. And my wife's actually a small animal vet, and we met quite young, and she's always been very passionate about animals, and so therefore I've always been very passionate about animals as well. And she's, you know, almost brought me into her world, because we never had pets growing up. My family, you know, Italian family, you know, pets aren't really a big part of that culture, interestingly. But you know, we met quite young, and she had this, you know, beautiful rescue Maltese Shih Tzu called Oscar, and, you know, fell in love with him, and then just became entrenched in the world of dogs. And then she went and studied at university, and so therefore, you know, I was sort of like a veterinary student spouse. So followed her along on the journey, and went through sort of the highs and lows of that. It's a grueling 5-year degree. So, you know, learnt all about that through sort of osmosis, I guess. But I think it was just seeing her passion and, you know, being involved in, you know, different rescues, different shelters. And then ultimately where the sort of journey to right paw came from was, you know, just seeing her sort of coming home every day from the clinic and just talking about her cases and saying, oh, you know, I saw this dog that was suffering from, you know, hip dysplasia, or that was suffering from, you know, DM, degenerative myelopathy, and just almost thinking like, you know, I'm seeing these too late, you know, seeing a dog with behavioral issues, you know, or even a dog's ending up in shelters. It was almost like she was too late in the process to really affect meaningful change. And then when we sort of uncovered it, and we sort of tried to really understand, well, where can you make the biggest difference in sort of the welfare and the life of a dog? And you sort of trace it back and you go, well, it's at the beginning. You know, it's right at the very beginning where, you know, you're matching the right owner, the right dog, the right breed, the right breeder. And that's ultimately where you can influence the most change.
And I will say, it's a much more romantic journey than what mine has been. Well done, Nathan. But that's why I love what Right Paw does, because you have this really nice focus on health. Mm. It's an important that if you're on there and you want to be a breeder and you want to promote your animals on there, your number one tick is accreditation and health, and that's what I love about it. So there's a really nice synergy about what Orivet does and what Right Paw does as well. So excellent. But lovely romantic story there, Nathan. I love it. Maybe I should be speaking to your partner and not you.
I think you should. I'm trying to bring her onto the podcast. I think she'll be on some future episodes. Absolutely. I mean, it sounds romantic as well, but, you know, when you're working and living with your partner and working on something, you know, it's the lines are blurred between work and life. So it sounds romantic, but, you know, it's, you know, it's a struggle as well.
Every holiday that was planned or we did 15 years ago was at Seymour Agricultural Show, was either at Kilsyth Show. Sometimes we flew to state and go to the Mount Gabby, a dog show. And after about 10 shows, my family said, enough is enough. We want to go on a proper holiday. Lovely, lovely story. So great. So I love how the synergy's there. I love how we're both in that same industry. I love how your tool and what you're offering is pretty much focusing on health as well. And it's a really nice, I've had a quick look at it and I really love how it makes, you know, someone who's not only brilliant, but someone who's looking to purchase a potential, you know, pet, the information's there. It's easy for them and easy for the breeder as well.
Yeah, that's what it was really important to us, just to make it just really simple and communicate all of the, you know, important things that you need to know. Because, you know, ultimately what we realized was people who are looking for a dog for the first time, you know, they don't know where to go. It can be a bit impenetrable. And, you know, you start at Google and you jump from site to site to site and you're trying to understand, you know, what should I be looking for? You know, which is the right breed for me? Which is the right breeder? How do I differentiate? So we really wanted to just create a site which just laid out the information really clearly, allowed you to, you know, understand everything about a breeder who pours their heart and soul into, you know, their breeding program. So really bring that to life. Health testing, as you said, you know, make that the forefront so you can see exactly what testing, whether it's physical or genetic, is being conducted. And just make it really easy then to apply for that breeder, communicate with them and have a great experience. Because that's, I think, the best way that we can try and, you know, educate the public is, you know, do that.
One thing that I've seen in this 20 years is just the enormous change that's happened, not only to the way you breed, but the puppy buyer, more educated, you know, they want more information, you know, as you said, Google provides them with a lot of that information too. They want somewhere where they can visit and ensure that the breeders are accredited. We have this lovely organisation called the ANKC, which lists your, you know, your pedigree dog owners, and you've now got different organisations which have branched out. You know, 20 years ago, there wasn't, you know, the demand probably wasn't as high and, you know, pet parenting was different. You know, it wasn't, you know, who would ever think there'd be, you know, something close to $5,000 paid for a pet today? It happens today. You know, who would ever think you'd take your puppy with you to a coffee shop 15 years ago? You know, it happens today. When you're ordering that soy latte, you've probably got your puppy there next to you as well. So the whole way we accommodate our pets has changed enormously. And the way we're going to purchase them, the way we want to view them, maybe a breeder wants to be able to list them, is different. And that's where I think Rightpaw is fantastic and provides a great tool in that sort of online for them.
I was going to ask, like, what have you seen change, like, in the breeding world over the last couple, like since you started Orivet? You know, what's changed? What have you observed in the way breeders are working, or, you know, trends that you've seen? I'm really curious.
Good question. And it's been enormous. I'll break it down into two things.
Yeah,
firstly,
yeah,
the way the technology's changed. So technology's changed. Today, in 15 years ago, you did one test, you ran it one test at a time, you could charge someone $120 and make, you know, one, and it wasn't as automated. The technology has now moved to be what we call mass array, where you're now running a whole number of tests, running close to 200 tests at close to $170, and the processes are less manual. So technologies move to what we call a mass array automation. And with that, unfortunately, the negatives are is that your results take a longer period because it's all automated in these processes. Some of the other things that have changed is with that technology and that availability and that affordability is that there's been a change in some of the non-traditional breeders are now breeding for phenotypic requirements, so looking for specific colors.
Yeah, I've noticed this recently. It's really interesting. People are able to look at, you know, the phenotypic traits and decide, you know, if I'm going to breed red or brindle, or, you know, how that sort of works to interpret and influence the colors that will come out.
Exactly. So Nathan, 15 years ago, no one would have paid $120 to find out whether their dog carried a particular color. It was, the drive was more just for their basic health tests. But the consumer has also changed a bit of the requirements. The consumer has also, is the one that's driving, I want this particular breed. Can I get it in this particular color? Although it goes along the traditional breeding, it's something the consumer drives. So unfortunately, a blue Stafford or a Dapple Dachshund is what the consumer wants. So then the breeder is breeding towards the consumer's requirements. It's changed enormously in that way. The volume of testing has changed because it's more accessible. It's more affordable. It's, as I said before, the change has also been driven by the consumer who's more educated when they purchased an animal. And, you know, if you're going to pay a certain amount for it, you want to make sure it has these health tests. There's also government codes and regulations that have come in. And I'm sure you're seeing it in your job.
Absolutely.
The industry and governments, it's becoming more regulated. There's now BIN numbers. There's now codes where you can't breed an animal with a heritable defect as well.
It's almost like it's become a lot more sophisticated. Like it's, you know, not only the testing's evolved, the regulations evolved, the sophistication of the consumer has evolved. Like it's all almost, it's just completely turned on its head.
There was a reason I wanted you on this podcast, Nathan. It's that word sophisticated as well. You know, you've come up, that's exactly, they've become more sophisticated. And the consumer has become more sophisticated. I need the younger person because it's the wording you come up with. And it's fantastic, exactly how you say it. They've become more educated. And maybe we can dedicate one of the podcasts to look at some of the rules and regulations and codes of practice to help people. And we can leave that for another episode, which would make it a really nice sort of, and bring someone in to talk.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when we were putting together the Right Paw Code of Ethics, so I mean, every breeder on Right Paw has to go through our verification process. They have to go and basically pass a verification call with one of our team. And, you know, we were writing that code of ethics and ultimately what we realized was every state and territory is different. So it does make it extremely difficult. So I think we could devote 3 episodes to talking about it, but it's very dense as well.
So one of the positive things, and I think it's something you'll find once you start, is that I will say I have been in this industry for 15 years, and there are still clients and people that still health test and use me that used us 15 years ago. So they're still testing. You know, new tests are coming along, and of course that is a challenge for a lot of breeders, and that's trying to keep up with all these new tests. Probably, you know, in the last 2 months, there's 4 new tests that are out there. So how does a breeder get on top of those? And maybe, again, we can talk about that in another episode. How do you approach, you know, eliminating particular heritable defects? How do you do it when there's new tests coming along? Yeah. How does it impact your old breeding stock? So one of the fun things, and I do so enjoy, is that I have plenty of great friends, and you know, I don't call them cousins, but friends that I talk to and still communicate with that I started with 15 years ago. And from a wise man to a younger man, I will say that there's nothing more important than your customers to learn and grow your business from. Most of the tools and items that we've put on have come to me from my breeders, my customers, who will give me advice and tools to look at and what they use and what they find more useful for what they need. So that's why I constantly chat to them. I constantly go to shows, and I find them as an excellent business tool.
Yeah, they're a sounding board, and they're the people that are giving you like the on the ground advice and opinions as well. And I think that's one of the things, like coming as an outsider almost to the breeding world, like it's an incredibly close-knit community. It's, you know, everyone knows everyone. They're all so passionate. Like you can just see the, you know, the passion and hear it, you know, when we get to speak to them every day. Like it is it's so palpable. And you know,
like I said, I go to dog shows, not as much as what I used to, but you know, 90% of it's just spent chatting to breeders and what they do. And, you know, some stick to this breed and some love this breed, and, you know, the way they dress up and just the effort they put in. And I'm sure you've gone to a few and it's just lovely. I mean, I don't go as much, but you know, it was in my first 10 years, I literally attended a dog show every weekend.
Yeah, I want to hear a bit more about that, because I remember you were telling me separately about, you know, your first couple of years, you know, going to dog shows, trying to get Orovet off the ground. Tell me what that was like.
You know, It was windy. Yeah. Banners always fell down. Your tablecloth could never stick down. You know, unfortunately, those places they have these shows at, for some reason, are windy. No, but look, initially it was hard. You were trying to, you know, educate. You were trying to show people the positives of testing. And sometimes you'd go there and maybe talk to one or two people, but it all comes down to making sure you find the right personalities. You go up to people and what they're showing, and you just talk to them about their dogs, how long they've been in it. And then you find that when you go to the following week, you know, a wave becomes a chat. And then the following week, you know, becomes a 5-minute conversation. And then when you go again, it's a 1-hour conversation, and it builds. It's like anything. It's new to them. You know, you've got to understand, it is difficult being a breeder. There's a, you know, it is a hobby. You know, it's not really there as something that they, and going to dog shows is part of the social enjoyment of it. And I was going there as part of the social enjoyment. But I went to shows that were at, you know, Royal Showgrounds, which no longer exists. And they were always fun. You know, Sky was somewhere I went frequently. But if you're going to go, remember, take lots of paper clips, bulldog clips, weights and pegs, because it is, things are going to blow everywhere. And especially with my work, where you've got to fill in a lot of paperwork, it was a nightmare.
Oh, gosh. I can imagine you, you know, in your little stall with everything, all the flies handing around.
Trying to hand things. And as I said in the initial part, you know, a lot of the breeders also became very close with my family. I'd take the kids along and, you know, they were there and hello. So it became, I enjoyed it. It was fun. But, you know, unfortunately, I just don't go as much. But, yeah, stick to it. It's always, you know, I didn't go to many of the major ones, the royal shows, because I always found those just too difficult to talk to people. Breeders are always busy at those, at the larger shows. And I started things like seminars, giving presentations at some of them, educating. It's important. You're trying, you know, this is all new to them as well. So, yeah, it started off slow. But then it gets to a stage where it's almost in autopilot.
Yeah, we went to our first dog shows, actually, like the last few years. So when we started Rightpaw, we went to the Canberra Royal, which was sort of like our first initiation into the dog world. And we, you know, we only knew one breeder when we were there, Di Gooding from Wrinkles, Sharpeys and Chows. You know, lovely breeder and lovely human. And, you know, she sort of introduced us, she welcomed us, and we were able to sort of get a feel for the breeding community. And, you know, I think breeders, you know, sometimes they can get a bad rap, you know, in the public. People, you know, don't understand, you know, why they do certain things, or, you know, why you'd be breeding dogs. But that when you meet one, you just realize that they have so much passion and love for what they do, and they're doing it all to benefit the breed and to benefit the dogs themselves. And they're just such salt of the, like, beautiful salt of the earth people.
They are lovely. I have plenty that come into the office and still continue. I won't mention names, but hopefully I might even be able to get them in for as a guest and chat to us. They are lovely. And, you know, don't get me wrong, with every group, there's a group that's probably, you know, difficult to manage and chat to, but that's in any industry. I've met Di, and I've spoken to the Chow Chow Club and given plenty of presentations to them as well, and lovely people. And, you know, I have a saying, you know, the lunatics run the asylum. And, you know, sometimes the lunatics are free and you let them get out there, but in general, they love their breed. And you're right, they do sometimes get a bad rap from these rescue owners who believe they're breeding and breeding to them. It's just not true. And I will argue this, where does every pet come from? It's bred, it doesn't drop out of the sky, so someone breeds them. Yes, there are dogs that end up in rescues, and they're usually done by people that breed outside of a code or not in a group. And unfortunately, the industry sometimes has these people, which I won't put them into a particular category, but breeding for other purposes other than health, or sticking to a particular code, and they unfortunately give the bad rap. But we're seeing less and less dogs in pounds today, am I right, mate?
Well, I think certainly in the last like year during COVID, that like the shelters have been you know, drastically like the number of animals in shelters is drastically low. And I think that's, I mean, it's a great thing. I do, you know, we all worry a little bit about what happens when the world goes back to normal and, you know, people are going back to work and you know, you shudder to think about what's going to happen. Hopefully the shelters, you know, don't get flooded again. But I think that was really important for us. You know, if you can match the right owner and the right pup at the very beginning, then you're going to stem the tide of people in like who are going into shelters. And, you know, all breeders, you know, that truly do care about the welfare of their dogs will always say, you know, if you ever can't look after a dog anymore of mine, I will take it back gladly. And that's actually one of the sort of parts of our code of ethics. You know, every breeder has to be willing to take their dog back during its life if the owners can't care for it anymore.
And, you know, I don't usually give a shout out to governments and state governments and councils, but I will say that there's less and less because they've banded together and over the last 15 years have made it actually more difficult and challenging for someone just to be a backyard breeder. There's rules now in place from compulsory microchipping that's come in place 10 years ago to now having to be accredited with the councils. You know, you Joe Blow around the street, the two dogs don't breed anymore. It doesn't happen like it happened 15 years ago where dogs roamed and you could breed, and now you've got to be compulsory de-sexing. Now breeders also sit on it. So it's tightened everything. Yeah. Most rescue pound dogs that you see today are usually working type breeds, if I'm right. And maybe we can have a session where we can get someone in to discuss some of this and some of the all Arab type breeds that you see again, some of the working breeds. And let's not forget, when we could probably try and get in, there's a great program that the Greyhounds have got out, which is a great adoption program.
Yeah, the well. GAP, yeah, GAP.
So there, I see lots of Greyhounds out there and lots of people with them, and it's fantastic. But did you know you can't make a greyhound sit?
Really? I could have sworn I've seen a greyhound sit.
Time you see some with a greyhound, you ask them if they can make it sit. You can't. It's body size that doesn't. Now,
maybe I just see them lying down because they're couch potatoes. They just sleep. They just sit on the lounge.
But they, you know what I mean? They're just a really chilled out dog, you know what I mean, as a greyhound. And they've come a long way. Who would have thought 4 years ago that you'd see every third person with a greyhound? It's happening. It's the adoption program is working.
Mm. Yeah, it's great. One of my good friends just got a greyhound in the last year, and they live in a tiny, you know, small, one of those sort of semi terrace houses, and they literally, you know, don't have a lot of space, but they've got this huge dog that wanders around the house like it owns the place. And but yeah, it's because, you know, it sleeps, it sits, you know, just relaxes half the time.
Isn't it scary that at the sight of a lure working, it can switch back on and just run like it can? You see it just at home and it's just hounding around.
Yeah.
But it can just switch on and just run like the wind. Mm. So, again, some of the beauties of just different breeds and just how they each have a different role and characteristic, which we can, again, we'll get a greyhound expert in one.
I think we should. Well, I mean, speaking of dogs, I think it's only fair that we need to introduce an important member of the podcast who I'm sure we'll hear about a lot, which is Charlie. I feel like you need to give us a bit about Charlie.
He's sitting outside right now. He hates doors being closed. So Charlie is, of course, an important member of our family. He's a Boston Terrier who's close to 11 and a half years old. He comes to work with me literally every day. The only time he won't come to work with me if I have an important meeting and I have to leave the office because he suffers from really bad anxiety, which George has created for him, where if George is not around, he literally freezes and waits for George to come back. And you know what? I'd love to talk about office dogs. And one thing that Charlie does and is really good, he's good when you've got a meeting happening and he can sense that something's not traveling well. He'll come up and give a bit of a scratch. He works on the tone of your voice, especially when George's tone isn't at what it should be, and sort of get you to calm down. And he loves visitors because visitors mean either a coffee or a tea and a biscuit. And usually someone gives him a bit of a biscuit.
Yeah. So it's good positive association there.
So, yeah, we will meet Charlie. He's an important part. Literally, All my social media and all my posts are never photos of me. They're photos of Charlie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's on the Aurovet site. If I want to chat with someone on Aurovet, they click the corner and there's a face of Charlie.
So, yes, I'm glad you brought up Charlie. Charlie is an important part of my journey, and he continues to. We make fun of him. He's great. He's really good in the office. He calms everyone down. He goes in. It's funny, even if someone gets a biscuit and walks into the other office, he'll follow him in there and, you know, wait. It's the only time he's not next to George, you know, when this. So he likes crumbs. He's fantastic. He's a calming influence. And next one podcast, I will bring him on, and although he can't talk, I'll see if I can at least get him to break wind, and I can say, "Oh, Charlie, you haven't done that again." But anyway, we can talk about it. Yeah, lovely. Thank you for bringing up Charlie, because he'll be very disappointed if I didn't mention.
I know. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I'm sure he would have taken it to heart.
So I thought, Nathan, just to so as part of this podcast, what we should do is try and educate breeders on a disease. So I have this fantastic little book of 120 common diseases in the dog.
It's like the Bible.
Yes, this is the Bible. What I want you to do is I want you to pick a number between 1 to 185.
Okay. Oh, let's go. You know what? Let's go with a nice round number. I'll go with 20.
20. So I'm going to open up to page 20. And let's have a look. You're going to hear some pages flicking through.
You look, George, the listeners can't see George, but he looks like a professor. He's got this. He's got a blazer on. He's got, you know, his Bible in front of him. I'm ready to learn.
Nathan, let's paint the picture properly. I've got a black skivvy on, really sort of. I've got the glasses on with the jacket, and I look like a Poindexter. Yes, I know. So here is, you've chosen a real beauty today. Talk about tongue twister.
Oh,
disease goes for two pages. It's usually one. So this is cervical spondylomyelopathy.
That is a tongue twister.
Yes, spondylomyelopathy. Now, the great thing about science is that we are really good at abbreviating and making a long word very simple. So, of course, cervical spondylomyopathy is also known as CSM and also known as canine wobbler syndrome.
Wobbler syndrome.
So, you see, this is what I love about science. So I've given you this real technical scientific term, but I know when I go to a dog show, someone comes up and he goes, "George, can you tell me about wobbler syndrome?" So
I'm ready. I'm ready to learn.
Is a condition of large and giant breeds. Interesting. So if you've got a small chihuahua, forget it. You're not going to have wobbler. In fact, could you imagine a chihuahua with wobblers?
I feel like they wobble enough.
That's right. I'm pretty sure I've seen wobbler syndrome in a few humans once they leave a pub. But anyway, and it's the narrowing of the spinal canal in the neck region, leading to compression of the spinal cord, causing damage to the nerves within the spinal cord. Now, I know this happens to Dobermans and Great Danes. We've heard about it in Dobermans and Great Danes, and that's this condition. So this is all being written by one of our lovely vets called Dr. Nettie Maddy in our book here. So rather than spend, you know, going through all the 100-odd words, it's usually seen around about, signs are seen between 4 to 8 years of age. Mm. In the Great Dane, it's seen a lot more earlier, 3 to 18 months. Interesting, one breed. So what's that telling you straight away? Different variants, different mutations in different breeds.
Different breeds.
And this is, again, another segment where we talk about, why is it I see a genetic disease in a number of breeds, yet the genetic test is only specific to one or two breeds? So what I'm reading here already is that we have two wobblers, and I guarantee you both will be different genetic tests. Mm. So,
and is it a new test, or is it something that's been around for a while?
Absolutely. This was mentioned to me by Doberman breeders 15 years ago, seeing wobblers. So let's have a look. It's difficult to manage, and I'm going to give you just some brief screening for CSM. Bad news, there is currently no genetic test for screening for CSM.
Ah, And why is that? Why would that be?
So again, Nathan, you're leading to another podcast. We can have.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. I'm going off on tangents.
Most likely because it's a complex disease that is more than just one gene. Mm. So we call that polygenetic.
So you can't just isolate the one gene you're looking for.
But with the advance in technology and the ability for us to sequence a genome today, we may be able to get somewhere which is more, we were able to monitor with a genetic test. So let's have a look at you currently screened for this. You currently screen for, and this is to all the veterinarians out there, I'm just reading, is you do a lateral cervical radiography, could be considered, although usefulness as screening tool, not conclusive. Only perform if assessed by a veterinary radiologist. The age of testing should be from 3 months to 1 year, depending on the breed. And you may miss it in some causes. Definitive screening only obtained by CT scan or MRI. That's it. So you've chosen a disease that you can't genetically test. It's seen in breeds such as the Doberman, the Great Dane, the Basset Hound, the Borzoi, and for dye, the Chow Chow apparently has wobblers, the Fox Terrier, the German Shepherd, the Ridgeback, the Rottweiler, and the Wolfhound are some of the breeds it's seen in. So that means you can't pick number 20 next time, Nathan.
No, I can't. And I feel like I haven't picked a great one to start because it's one of the only ones with no test available.
Picked a very interesting one. I have had people request me about wobbler's disease for close to 15 years. So I think you've done well.
I reckon if any of our lovely listeners shares one of our posts, we'll put a post up on our Right Paw page about the podcast and the Aurivet Facebook page as well. And if you share the podcast Facebook post, you'll get you'll go in the draw to win a copy of the book that George mentioned, as well as George kindly give away a profile.
Either give a DNA voucher for anyone who shares the podcast as well to the value of a full breed profile.
Amazing. There you go. That's great. I look forward to that. Okay. I'll make a note. 20 is a no-go. 20 is wobblers.
And then 20 is wobblers. No more number 20.
All right. Awesome. Well, no, I look excited to kick off this journey with you, George. I think, you know, we're going to have some great guests on board. We're going to talk about a whole host of different topics every episode. And bring in all of our friends and make it, you know, a really, you know, awesome, informative, educational journey for breeders and people who are just interested in learning more about the world of dogs.
Yeah, I'm so excited by this is our first, and I'm so excited about the, you know, where it will lead to and the opportunities and getting guests in. It's going to be so great when we get guests in and talk to them and learn off them, and then they can educate others. And
yeah, you never stop learning.
No, never do, never do.
Love it. Oh, brilliant, George. Well, thanks for joining today and excited to kick off this journey ahead.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thanks for listening to What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast. If you like the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. And feel free to share it with your friends, be they human or canine. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at podcast@rightpaw.com.au. Or you can find more info on Aurivet and Right Paw at our Facebook or Instagram pages.